You are tuned to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and this is Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in studio with me Minnesota Representative for District 54B, Tony Juergens. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm wishing I was that Minnesota person that placed the bet on Kentucky Derby. I was hearing this on the news this morning. A $1 bet, and he hit what they call the superfecta. He was able to properly guess the four finishers of the race.
Unreal, isn't it? 80 to 1 just on the winner, Rich Strike.
And this guy also correctly named 2, 3, and 4, and his $1 investment returned $321,000.
Boy, that's a pretty good return. I'd take that.
You know, that
especially since Rich Strike was an alternate. He wasn't even in the race until about 24 hours before.
Congratulations to whoever that Minnesota resident is that has a different outlook on life this morning.
It was a fun race to watch. You know, also Friday and Saturday, I had hoped to go to Sioux Falls to watch the Howard Wood Dakota Relays. It's a big track meet. It's about a five. There's competitors from five states, and my niece from in Rapid City, Brooklyn, was running. Uh-huh. And I was hoping to get to Sioux Falls to watch, but we had bills that were scheduled for Friday, so I wasn't able to go, but I did find a live stream, so I watched some track meet over the weekend as well,
and that's good.
Watching it online.
And that makes a nice segue into what we have got in front of us on our agenda for today. It was a very busy week in the legislature last week, and a lot of things moving, omnibus bills being presented and deliberated, conference committees probably in full swing.
Right.
We mentioned as we were getting this show ready to go that you were talking about a vets omnibus bill that was a unique approach to legislation in that context. Take us through that a little bit, please.
Yeah, unfortunately, it is unique for the veterans bill, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, the last couple of weeks we've been talking about the omnibus bills that we've been taking up, and you know, the bills are big enough as they are, but the House leadership has been combining subject areas, mm-hmm. and the veterans bill was combined with, I think, three or four other subject areas when it came through, which was unfortunate. A lot of us wanted to vote for the veterans bill and the things that were in that bill, but it was surrounded by so much other stuff that many of us it wasn't a bill that we wanted to vote for.
Right.
So I was really happy this past week. They brought back an omnibus bill for veterans issues only. And a lot of the same components that were in that larger omnibus bill were in this, but it was a standalone veterans bill, which, you know, I figured it had been several years since that had happened. Representative Bob Detmer from Forest Lake, who is a veteran and is very out front with veterans issues, he told me that it's something he's been trying to get done in the 16 years he's been in the House. So it's been at least 16 years, probably longer, since a veterans-only omnibus bill has come to the House floor. And so we did pass that on Friday with near unanimous. I don't know, there's at least one person who, for some reason, voted against veterans. But it passed overwhelmingly. And some of the things that were in the bill, for example, several years ago we funded new veterans homes in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston.
Okay.
And due to inflation, there's been some cost overruns.
Sure.
And so
sure,
they don't want to cut corners. They want to make sure that these buildings, these homes for Minnesota veterans, are state of the art. So there was some supplemental spending to help finish those and furnish those homes. What was not in there was the Hastings Veterans Home. That is still traveling, hopefully will be included in a bonding bill. Although when the veterans bill came in, and I don't need to get into the procedural weeds too much, but in order to bring that bill up, we had to suspend the rules, which means it didn't go through the typical first reading on one day and then the second reading 3 days later and that sort of thing.
Sure.
We were able to. We all agreed to suspend the rules to bring that bill up immediately on Friday. Well, when you suspend the rules, then you can offer any amendments you want. It doesn't require a 24-hour notice on amendments like it normally would. And so I was tempted to offer an amendment to include the funding for the Hastings Veterans Home, but it would have been ruled out of order, and that's nearly $60 million in spending. It would have put the funding for that bill out of whack, and sure, it wouldn't have happened. So sure, I did get up and speak to the fact that this is good. We're taking care of veterans in those three veterans homes, taking care of other veterans' issues, and hopefully before the end of session, we can also take care of the veterans in the Hastings Veterans Home.
So, right.
We'll keep working on that as well. Every opportunity I get when I talk to somebody on the Capital Investment Committee or the chair of the committee, I always remind them of, hey, don't forget about the Hastings Veterans Home.
Right, right.
At this point, I don't have anything to offer, whether it's, you know, looking good or not looking good. Everything at this point when it comes to bonding, the bonding bill, is it's pretty fluid. So we might not know until the very end of session if that's in or not.
Okay.
I've reached out to the Hastings or Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs just to stay in the loop with them, because I'd heard some things about this project, and I want to make sure that everything I do is to help it and not hurt it. So I'm trying to stay in conversation with everybody involved.
Okay. And going back to the omnibus bill in general, is it an uncommon thing to have what we might want to call a single topic omnibus bill come through the system? Or is just by the definition of omnibus, you throwing a conglomeration of things together?
Unfortunately, that conglomeration is more normal,
okay,
than just the single subject omnibus bill. And that's a real frustration it's a frustration for everybody, but mm-hmm, yet it happens. It's gotten way out of control, where these omnibus bills get combined into subject areas that really don't have anything to do with each other.
Sure.
And even if you take a single subject like agriculture, for example, there might be 100 provisions in an ag-related omnibus bill. Many people would say that there shouldn't even combine those issues. Each of those 100 provisions should stand on their own as a
sure,
single mm-hmm, separate bill. And technically, that would be fine. It would take a lot more time that way.
Right.
Where this way, if you have an issue like, for example, agriculture, and you can combine the different agriculture-related issues, you can take care of those with one bill. But a lot of us would like to see even more separation and more bills on their own. That's mm-hmm, we're there anyway.
Yep.
Let's run them through and take them on each on their own. Let them pass or fail on their own merit.
All right. So the omnibus bills are kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time. You
right,
get a whole block of legislation completed in one, shall we call it, session.
Right.
Just for common terminology. But there is a chance always of stuff being added or even taken away that really have nothing to do with
right,
the overall subject matter of that group of bills.
I was talking with the tax chair, Paul Marquardt, last week, just when we were in recess and we're waiting for session to start. And last year, at the very end of, actually it was the special session, it was the budget year, and we had the very last bill that we took up was his tax bill. And in that case, they throw things in. I mean, it's like the kitchen sink. It's a mixed salad. There's everything that you can think of gets thrown into one bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about somebody's amendment that they were considering ruling out of order. And Paul spoke up and said, wait a second, how can anything be out of order in this bill? Everything that we have in this bill is everything under the sun. I don't know how you can pick one amendment out and say it's not in order.
Right. So we will keep an eye then on the legislation for funding the new house or the new facilities at the Hastings Veterans Home. I would say at this point it's not a time to get up in arms that it's not going to happen, because we really don't know what these next two.
No,
like.
we just don't know at this point. We don't have enough information at this point of what that bill might look like.
Okay, and that bill or that particular project, let's say it that way. You've said in recent weeks that you've submitted a bonding bill and a funding bill,
mm-hmm,
and both of those have to do a little bit with the surplus that was projected
right,
earlier this session. and now those numbers have changed a little bit. I'd like to have you explain to our listeners how the surplus is faring right now. What's going on with it? Where is it at?
Right. So the most recent budget surplus, I believe, and again, this is a forecast.
Right.
It was forecasted to be $9.2 billion. And when what that forecast means is at the end of the biennium, so June of next year, June of 2023, at the end of June, it's projected that if spending stayed the same and revenue stayed the same or, you know, as projected, that we would be at a $9.2 billion budget surplus at the end of the biennium.
Sure.
Well, anything that we spend now in the general fund is going to reduce that.
Right.
And a couple of things that we've talked every week about, the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund and replenishing that. That used federal dollars, but it also used general fund dollars. So that reduces the forecasted surplus
because you're increasing the spending side of that equation.
Exactly. And there was over $300 million that we used to prop up reinsurance to help keep the individual health insurance rates down or prevent the large increases for individual health insurance. That was general fund spending, so that reduces what might the surplus might look like.
And then the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund that got replenished.
That and the frontline worker bonus pay that we came up with, that was all general fund spending. So right now we're looking at about a $7.1 billion surplus. Still a big chunk of money, and it's still a record amount of money. But just so people know that, you know, when you talk about a 9.2 forecasted surplus, that's all already been reduced for some of the things that we've done.
Right. And a lot of listeners that I talk to out in the community are all saying, well, ask Tony, are we getting our 7.2 back?
You know? Right. Well, in one way or another, and that's the thing that many of us are still hoping for, that there will be permanent, meaningful tax breaks or tax cuts coming by before the end of session in the next couple of weeks. That's what people deserve, and I think that's what people want, is to see meaningful tax rate cuts. And so, again, that'll probably come down to negotiations at the very end of session. You know, we hear about the one-time checks that the governor would like to send out, and nothing's ever dead in the legislature.
Right.
But that was not included in the Senate proposal, and it wasn't included in the House Democrats' proposal either. So it's highly unlikely, because now when they get to a conference committee, there's no commonality there.
Sure.
Wasn't in either bill.
Okay.
But again, nothing's ever dead in the legislature. It could resurrect itself, but I would say that those one-time checks are not very likely. It's more likely that it would be ongoing permanent tax cuts,
which I would not argue against.
Right.
Being a taxpayer, we're all taxpayers, and having to pay less of that is always enticing.
Right.
I would like to kind of change subjects at this point. We were talking about in show prep that it's been the 17th anniversary of the death of Sergeant Vic with St. Paul Police Department, and that kind of holds a special place in, when I say, your heart or your life.
Right.
And there were some recognitions of that over the weekend, I understand.
There was. So last summer I was asked to MC the annual Jerry Vic Memorial Golf Tournament at River Oaks Golf Course in Cottage Grove.
Okay.
And I didn't know Sergeant Vic. I remember hearing about him when he was killed in the line of duty 17 years ago. And so I just put it on my calendar. It was May 6, 2005, and I was put it on my calendar to remind myself of it when May 6th came around. And so on May 6th, on Friday, I did stand up on the House floor during the announcements and just acknowledge that, hey, it's been 17 years since Sergeant Jerry Vic lost his life in the line of duty. He was working undercover with Sergeant Strong, his partner. They were at Eric's Bar on the east side of St. Paul working on a human trafficking ring.
Okay.
Got into a confrontation with a couple of guys at one point during the night. They both were leaving in their personal vehicles to go back to the police station to end their shift. One of the gentlemen that they'd had the encounter with before stepped in front of the vehicle, of Sergeant Strong's vehicle, had a bit of a confrontation. He called Sergeant Vic to come assist. They ended up chasing the guy down the alley, and the guy turned around and shot Sergeant Vic. They performed CPR at the scene, but he was pronounced dead. So that was, again, 17 years ago. I'm sure people recall reading about that at the time. But it was really an honor to meet his wife, Connie, and his son, Clayton. He also has a daughter, Amanda, that was not at the at the Memorial Golf Tournament. But just to talk to his friends, I felt like I got to know who Jerry Vic was, mm-hmm. just from meeting his family and talking to his many friends. So it was I felt like it was something that I wanted to share with the rest of the state, the people that were watching the end of our session on Friday, to get up and acknowledge that. And of course, unfortunately, he's not the only law enforcement officer in the state of Minnesota who's lost his life in the line of duty. And I think they all should be recognized and for what they sacrifice to keep us safe every day.
Then that's a good thing that they are recognized for that ultimate sacrifice. And you know, we have military members that's kind of what they sign up for.
Right.
A police officer is a little different. They don't actually sign up looking forward to going into battle like that.
No,
they really don't.
But it's a reality. You know, I've done a lot of ride-alongs with law enforcement, and
mm-hmm.
and usually when we get into the car at the beginning of the shift, they just kind of matter-of-factly say, well, you know, if there's gunfire and you need to protect yourself, here's how you release the shotgun here.
Mm-hmm.
Or if an officer told me, well, if I get shot, then just key the radio, and this is what you're supposed to say.
Sure.
To bring help. And
yep.
It really, and to them, it's matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of the job. They realize that.
And to the ride-along person, that's kind of eye-opening,
I would
think.
It is eye-opening. Yeah. It is. And fortunately, in the many ride-alongs I've done, nothing has ever come close to that. There was one time I did a ride-along in Cottage Grove, and there was a non-compliant individual. And I was sitting in the passenger seat. I hadn't even gotten out of the car. And to my right, just, you know, inches away, was another Cottage Grove police officer with his gun drawn right next to, you know, right next to my head. And when they did apprehend the individual and had him on the hood of the car, you know, I was making eye contact with him. He's 3 feet away as they're cuffing him. So you really get into some of the what they live with every single day.
Right.
It's part of the job. They don't even. I've asked officers, well, what are some of the most unusual things that have come up on your shift? And they don't even really can't even really think of it, because it just happens so often. And then they go home. It's the end of the day, and
yep.
their shift is over. It's just common for them. So there's not a lot of they don't have a lot of stories. Now me, I have pretty much a story from every ride along I've ever done. Something has happened that's interesting that I remember.
Well, and so we will continue to commemorate those officers. At this point, though, we are just about out of time. I would like to give you the opportunity to provide your contact information should constituents need to get a hold of you.
Sure. You can email rep.tony.jurgens@house.mn or call 651-296-3135.
Good enough. I would like to thank my guest for this segment of Community In-Depth, State Representative for District 54B, Tony Jurgens. Sir, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. You are listening to Community In-Depth on KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7.